seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
The countdown is on to Super Bowl 54. Welcome into another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, live from the Auto Farm Studios as we continue our countdown to Super Bowl 54, which you will be able to listen to right here on KOAL. Our coverage is going to begin early Sunday morning. It'll take you all the way to kickoff, where then Kevin Harlan and Westwood One will take over the play-by-play duties. I'm excited for it. It is a fun time of the year, and we're going to have a very fun day on the show. In fact, we're going to get rolling right now. Today, we have five guests lined up for you. We're going to be joined by Mitch Wishnowsky, former Utah Ute punter, and now the punter for the San Francisco 49ers. We'll see him in Super Bowl 54 on Sunday night. We're also going to be joined by Los Angeles Rams Hall of Famer Jack Youngblood, former Kansas City Chiefs standout return man Dante Hull. He's known as the human joystick and also the X-Factor. Four-time Super Bowl champion Bill Romanowski, who won two with the 49ers and two with the Broncos. And our first guest on the show this afternoon, Ricardo Lockett. He spent five seasons in the NFL, most of which came with the Seattle Seahawks. He was a part of the team that defeated the Denver Broncos 43-8 in Super Bowl 48. He was an undrafted rookie free agent in 2011, and then his career came to a crashing halt in 2015 after suffering a neck injury. Ricardo Lockett joining us on the phone right now. He is down in Miami. We'll talk about his research on spinal cord injuries and more. Ricardo, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We can talk about your career in just a moment, but I do want to start talking about your emphasis being here at Super Bowl 54. And I know since your retirement back in 2006, you've kind of been an advocate for spinal cord injury research. And I know that you guys are definitely there kind of spreading the word, spreading some knowledge, correct?
That's exactly what we're doing. Everybody, you know, everybody enjoys the Super Bowl, but what they don't understand is these gladiators, the Monday morning after the Super Bowl, they're going to be in a lot of pain. And it's our job to make sure that we ease that pain after the game and for the rest of their lives.
I'm glad you mentioned that the day after the game, right? The day after the game, it's easy for us in the media. We're going back, we're second guessing, we're talking hindsight, we're going over what happened yesterday. You guys are trying to recover. And before we talk about your devastating injury, I want to talk about what that's like. The day after a football game, a Sunday game in the NFL, what players go through on Monday morning, Ricardo?
Monday morning, man. First of all, Monday is a lot of ice. It's a lot of painkillers. And you're just doing the best you can to get past the game to be ready to play Sunday. And sometimes you have a game on Thursday night, you know, so it's a little tougher on those weeks to get it done. But the main thing is just trying to it's not learning the playbook. It's not understanding the opponent. It's being physically able to do what your mind wants it to do. And sometimes that gets difficult at a certain point.
We'll start by talking about your second stint with the Seattle Seahawks. And again, as we've talked about the spinal cord injury research, you obviously suffered an injury, a neck ligament damage that required season-ending surgery, and that ultimately, began the end of your career, correct? So, Ricardo, kind of talk to me about the injury that you sustained and what you've tried to do as far as raising awareness since that point.
Since that point, like you said, I broke my neck in 2016. And, you know, it's been pretty difficult for me. And what I found my strength through the Harvard football study with being able to help these guys. And everybody's career is going to come to an end. And I would love to help the guys be prepared. And I thought this was something that was very needed as far as on the player's health side. Because, you know, you have a lot of agents and you have different assistants that will help you, you know, buy a house and a car and help you with contracts. But who helps you with your overall health at the end of football and during football? And I thought that it was, you know, definitely needed. I thought it was remarkable that, you know, these great doctors and cardiologists and neurologists would lend their time to help me and my friends. And it's for me to bring my friends in and let them know that there's people that care.
You talk about how you guys can get help financially. You have agents looking out for you, different players you can take on as mentors that can help you guys throughout your career financially. But when an NFL player's career comes to an end, what is that like, and how much help do you have knowing that you can no longer physically play the game? What are some of the steps that you've seen the league kind of put in motion to help these guys when their career does come to an end?
Well, for me, man, and sorry to the fans, it was great that I got a chance to win the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, it was against the Denver Broncos. But it was great that I could end my career with having gone to three Super Bowls and one win. So for me, it was okay getting over it. But the hard part was the rehab. The hard part was the headache or the neck trauma and those type of things. And I went through it mostly alone. I had my teammates there with me. But at the same time, they you know, they're still playing. So it's not like a retired player that most of his other former teammates are retired. None of my teammates were retired, so there's no one there. And also, while I'm at home, you know, to everyone else, I'm a leader. I'm a king. I'm a gladiator. So what is pain and what are these things? So, you know, for me, it was easy getting over the game, but the hard part was going through one of the toughest parts of my life without being on a team. I grew up on a team, elementary school, middle school, high school, college, NFL in, no team. And then this is one of the, you know, toughest injuries you ever had. So it was very difficult, and I would love for myself and my team to be there for guys in those situations.
Again, Ricardo Lockett, our guest right now. Ricardo spent time in the NFL with the Seattle Seahawks, San Francisco 49ers as well, had two stints with the Seattle Seahawks and retired in 2016 after suffering a neck injury. Ricardo, I want to talk about your time in the Super Bowl. That's what this is obviously about, biggest weekend for the game of football. You got to experience this a couple of times, and of course, as you mentioned, you won a Super Bowl as well. What's it like for a player, especially someone coming from your angle? You were an undrafted free agent following the NFL lockout, and you latched on to a team and eventually got to play in three Super Bowls.
Yeah, man, this game is bigger than you know. For the guys, you know, the guys that are sitting in the hotel right now, they're going over their playbooks, you know, just getting prepared for the game. But there's a lot of things that go on that the average person don't think about. You have to watch that player over and over, whoever you're going against. You're watching them for 2 weeks straight. You're understanding what he does. You're understanding how he holds his hands when he does certain things. You're understanding where he puts his feet and, you know, his hand gestures or whatever. You know, different minor details to give you any inch on winning the game. You got to deal with, you know, flights, and you have to deal flights for your family, tickets for your family, hotel rooms for your family. Someone missed their flight. Someone misplaced their ticket. You know, people trying to buy the playbook from you. People, you know, offering different opportunities for commercials, and your agent telling you about different teams that wants to sign you. And this is your contract year. You know, have a great game. And all of this is before the kickoff. So it gets really hectic to a player, and you're just ready for Sunday to come and just get it over with and, you know, finally get a chance to go home and as a champion and enjoy it with family.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you have fun during the two-week process? Is it fun at any point in time?
It's fun leading up to it. It's fun actually knowing winning that the NFC or AFC championship. That's exciting. You know, you're going to the Super Bowl, and then you're planning for it. But then once you get here, you don't know what to expect because you've never been in the Super Bowl. So the hype that's behind it, the lights, the crowd, everybody from your hometown calling you and texting you and figuring out all these things. You know, it's so much to deal with that it's somewhat overwhelming to a player. So it's exciting, but then, you know, the excitement leaves at a certain point.
Ricardo, two more questions for you, and I want to get your opinion on the game coming up this Sunday. Who do you like and why?
Well, I played the last time the 49ers were in the Super Bowl, I was on the team when we played in New Orleans. So I can 1,000% say my heart, mind, body, and soul is with the 49ers. And I look forward to my brother, Richard Sherman, coming home with another ring.
And we can end with this. Again, you're such an advocate for spinal cord injury research. That was with the Seattle Science Foundation. I know you've also talked about Harvard and what you guys are doing at Super Bowl 54 this week. Please let the listeners know where they can find more information on the work that you do today.
Everyone, please go follow at Players Study on Instagram and Twitter. That is where you're going to find all your information. There's where, the cardiologists, neurologists, and spinal cord surgeons, and everyone that has a significant chance to help the future of football and the current status of football. I think every football player should follow that on Twitter and Instagram to be updated on the new health finds as far as football.
Ricardo, it was a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking out the time. I look forward to following more of your guys' work, and enjoy Super Bowl 54.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Again, that's Ricardo Lockett, former Seattle Seahawk wide receiver, Super Bowl 48 champion, and now an advocate for spinal cord injury research. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll be joined by Dante Hall, former Kansas City wide receiver. You know him as the X Factor, and that's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Counting down the days till a big game, Super Bowl 54, which is happening this Sunday between the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Our next guest on the show today knows a thing or two about the Kansas City Chiefs. Dante Hall, two-time Pro Bowl wide receiver, first-team All-Pro in 2003. He also spent one season with the St. Louis Rams. He accumulated 12 touchdowns in the return game and 9 receiving touchdowns. Dante Hall joining us right now over the phone. And Dante, it's a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Dante, we can talk about your illustrious career, but before we do that, I want to talk about Super Bowl 54 and the fact that your strong ties with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now you're in Miami and you're gearing up for Super Bowl 54. What's this atmosphere been like for you being a former Kansas City Chief and now seeing this team in the Super Bowl for the first time in a really long time?
Yeah, a long, long time, a half a century long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing, because I love the Kansas City Chiefs organization. I think the fan base is second to none. So I'm so excited that fan base, this organization, and also Andy Reid gets to get back here and get a chance to finally get a ring, man. So I'm just so happy. I'm happy for everyone.
What's your involvement with the Kansas City Chiefs today? Do you have any involvement at all, or do you sit back and more just admire as a fan?
Well, I'm definitely a fan, but I'm also an ambassador with the Chiefs. So that just basically means, you know, we still go out into the community and do work on behalf of the Chiefs. We do a lot of, like, you know, meet and greets, fan events, just a plethora of things within the organization as former players. So, yeah, I'm an ambassador, and I'm very involved with the team. So I'm not only a fan, but I'm somewhat an employee, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a W-9.
So, Dante, going back to last season where this team came so close to getting to the Super Bowl, falling short, obviously, the offsides call against Steve Ford. Now they get back this season. That's a long haul. It's almost exhausting to think about, right? You're this close to getting to the Super Bowl. You fight back. You had some injury problems throughout the season. This team managed to right the wrongs. What's that climbing that mountain like for a football player, especially someone like a Tyreek Hill, who probably you can relate to on some level, to get so close and then finally climb that mountain?
Well, I can tell you from my own experience, it's not easy. In 2003, we started the season 9-0, finished the season 13-3, had a bye week, and all we needed to do was win two home games to make it to the championship. We lost against Peyton Manning and the Colts, and we never got back to that point again. The closest we got in my era was 3 years later. We played Peyton Manning again in 2006, and, yeah, we got blew out. So I can tell you from experience, just because you had a good year 1 year does not automatically means you're going to have success the following year. So it is super impressive to see these guys climb that mountain again and get right back into the dance, into the big show, and now they have an opportunity to actually win it all, man. That's probably the most impressive thing about this team this year. Like you said, they were right there, got knocked off in just the most heartbreaking way. Tom Brady freaking driving, you know, doing what Tom Brady does. But yet you come back, you work in the offseason, you put yourself right back in position to win it all again.
Well, let's talk about your career. If we go back to your first touchdown, 2002, I believe it was, you had your first touchdown. It was a 60-yard catch against the Jets, and then you also had a kickoff return. You had a couple of punts as well. Started developing a real identity in the league. You were known as the X-Factor, the human joystick. What do you remember about your first year in the league most, especially scoring that first touchdown?
I see you've done your research, but it's funny, man. My first year in the league did not pan out as I dreamed it as a little kid. It just didn't pan out that way for a plethora of reasons. But going into that second year, I started to get my foot wet a little bit. And, you know, like you said, once I got that first touchdown against the Jets, the confidence just grew crazy. And it's amazing how that's really all it took. I had the skill set. I just didn't believe in my skill set. I had the ability. I just wasn't, you know, I don't think it was being used the proper way. So I think between getting that first touchdown, having belief, and then having Coach Vermeil and his staff come over and put me in the right position changed everything, man. And I apply that in life, too. I try to teach my kids that. I try to teach the young guys that, you know, it's all about having belief in yourself, and you definitely need to be in the right position, right system, right coaching staff. And you'll be amazed at how far you can go with this thing.
I'm glad you bring up Coach Dick Vermeil. Obviously, today's the anniversary of the greatest show on turf winning their Super Bowl, a game that comes down to 1 yard. And, you know, you see the inspiration from Dick Vermeil. You hear the post-game speeches. You see how much he really loved his players. He was not afraid to cry when he was on the podium. And you mentioned Coach Vermeil putting you in the right position. What was it like playing for someone like Coach Vermeil, who went to the Super Bowl with the Eagles, many, many years later goes to the Super Bowl with the Rams, kind of bookend his career? What was that like?
It was like having a father that was hard on you, but loved you just as hard. That's exactly what I like in him, too. This man would work you like a Hebrew slave. I mean, long practices. I mean, just you walk out that field really questioning if you really wanted to play football. But then you would go to his house and have a glass of wine with him, have a cooked meal that he and his wife prepared. Not catered, he and his wife prepared. And then you realize, oh, okay, he works you hard, but he loves you just as hard. So it's like having a tough father that loves you, but you respect him all the more.
Again, Dante Hall, former Kansas City Chief, joining us ahead of Super Bowl 54. Dante, I do have a couple of more questions for you, as long as you have the time. Are we okay?
Yeah, we got two more.
Perfect. Two more questions. I have to ask you about 2003. You had a kickoff or a punt return for a touchdown in four consecutive games, which is still an NFL record. We talk about finding the rhythm all the time in basketball. We talk about it in baseball. But nobody's ever been in the zone from a special team standpoint as you were during that particular season, having four touchdowns in a row, four consecutive games. What was that like, and do you contribute that to rhythm? Were you seeing the field differently? What propelled you to shatter that NFL record?
Yeah, all of that. You said it. I was seeing the field different. But I think more than anything, we practiced hard on special teams. That was another Dick Vermeil trait. He was all about special teams. He started his career as a special teams coach. So special teams was very important. And because of that fact, we practiced it more than probably most and probably all teams throughout the NFL at that time. So I basically say the success of myself as an individual came from the team's success, because you had guys that had really bought in. Because when you play in a team game, you can't just do it by yourself. You definitely, yeah, I was in the zone. I was sitting the field different. I was doing my thing, but I also had a group of guys that, I mean, they really bought in to getting to the next level, getting that next man, you know, really putting that extra effort into special teams, because that's really what it comes down to. It's somewhat scheme, but it's all effort. And because of the way we practiced, because of the success we had early, the effort was next level. And that just, I was just a byproduct of it.
Last question, Dante. How do you see Super Bowl 54 playing out?
Oh, that's easy. Chiefs win. But I think it's going to be a close game. I think both teams are super solid. I just think Showtime Mahomes is going to be the difference maker. I look for him to have a moment like Tom Brady had in his first Super Bowl, where he drives the team down, puts them in position either for a go-ahead touchdown or for a go-ahead field goal. Chiefs, 34-31.
Dante Hull, the X Factor, a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for the time. Enjoy Super Bowl 54.
All right, my man. Peace.
That's Dante Hull, former Kansas City Chief wide receiver, giving us insight on his career and also giving us a prediction for Super Bowl 54. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll be joined by four-time Super Bowl champion Bill Romanowski right here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. All football talk today, and we got a great all-star lineup of guests that will be joining us throughout the afternoon. We're going to move on to our next guest, who is joining us right now over the phone. He's a four-time Super Bowl champion. He won two with the San Francisco 49ers, won two with the Denver Broncos, and went to another with the Oakland Raiders. He's also a two-time Pro Bowler, Bill Romanowski, who had a 16-year NFL career, and at one particular time, he held the record for most consecutive games played. Bill Romanowski joining us over the phone right now. Bill, thank you for the time.
You got it. Great to be on.
Bill, this has got to be a fun time for you. I think it's unique that you went to five Super Bowls, so now you get to see it from a fan/media perspective. Before we talk about Super Bowl 54, I got to get your thoughts on going through this process, which I know changed drastically over the course of your career, but you went through this five times as a player.
I did. I went through it in the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. And, you know, I have to say this. You know, a lot of people ask this question. At the end of the day, you're playing a game. You're playing football. And it's a team sport. And it's about 53 guys coming together, giving it up for one another, and literally willing themselves to victory. And, you know, the team that has the least amount of distractions and the best game plan that's ready to play is usually the team that wins. And, you know, I know it's not that easy, but on some level, it really is that easy.
Well, let's talk about your time with the 49ers. You win a couple of Super Bowls there, and then, of course, you win a couple of Super Bowls with the Broncos. You did fall short with the Oakland Raiders, and so when you talk about that process and not being distracted, what was the big difference in your mind from the two Super Bowls in San Francisco, the two in Denver, and then the loss with the Raiders?
Yeah. You know, those teams were very focused, very talented, ready to go. And in Oakland, we had an unfortunate situation happen. We had the Barrett Robbins situation happen. And I remember going to practice on Saturday, walk through practice, and what happened? Everybody was talking about Barrett Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And that distraction was enough to really cause an issue. And that, to me, ended up being the thing that hurt us the most, was that little distraction. It was actually not little, that big distraction that took people away from their game, made Rich Gannon worry a little bit because he did not have his center. And, you know, having to deal with that was not something that's conducive to winning.
You were very conducive to winning. You had a rich history in the NFL. In fact, if we go over some of your career accomplishments, 243 consecutive games between 1988 and 2003, which is just fantastic. And in today's game, you don't necessarily see it. Bill, what was your key to playing 243 consecutive football games without missing?
Well, let me add, if you add playoff and Super Bowls, it's 269 games.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. So with that being said, I learned at an early age how to take care of myself. Nutritionally, you know, I got a massage almost every day for 16 years in the NFL. That's what I did. I got adjusted at least three times a week. You know, I just kept myself dialed. I didn't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do those kind of things. And I just focused on recovering. And I'm sure there's a little bit of luck there, because there's some things that you just cannot get away from, and that's if somebody rolls on you, or if that someone hits you in the side, you know, and you get a knee injury. Those are things that you cannot combat. But for the most part, I just focus on taking care of myself and making sure I was relentless to the ball.
Again, we're being joined by Bill Romanowski, who's a four-time Super Bowl champ. Bill, you're definitely known for your fierce competitiveness on the field. Some of the altercations that took place during your time on the field, I have to ask you, was that part of the edge of making sure that you were always at the top of your game? Did that play into it, having that type of passion in it? Sometimes maybe getting into altercations with the opposition, did that play into your outstanding career that you put together?
Absolutely. You know, I looked at that is how could I get in the head of my opponent? And, you know, there were certain guys you just could not get in their head. And one of them was Brett Favre. But other guys, I was going to try everything in my power. And there was also an intensity line. And I never wanted to be below the intensity line. So I was always at it or a little bit over it. And with that came, you know, a lot of controversy at times in my career. But no one could ever fault me for not going 100% on every play.
You bring up Brett Favre and not being able to crack or get inside his head. Can you think of a quarterback that you knew every time you stepped on the field against him, you were going to get to him, you were going to get into his head? Can you name a quarterback like that?
You know what? This guy was a tough guy, but he was someone that for some reason when we played him, and this is Rich Gannon when he was at the Raiders and I was at the Broncos, for some reason, I would always get a sack against him. And I had just for some reason, we had the ability to really get to him. And it was awesome. And I loved it. And we won a lot of those games, but they were battles. Rich was one hell of a competitor, you know. And I remember when I came to the Raiders, he said, man, it is about damn time that I did not like going up against you.
That's fantastic. Bill, I have two more questions for you. I want to talk about the two quarterbacks you won Super Bowls with. Joe Montana, you also won a Super Bowl with John Elway. I mean, that's just phenomenal when you talk about two of the greatest to ever play the game. Obviously, you got to see these guys in practice. What made these two guys so great?
You know what? They had it. And when I say it, it's like the way they walked out of the locker room onto the field, you know, into the stadium. They just had this like, you just knew they were special. They just knew they were good. And it wasn't about cockiness. It was a confidence that they had. It's the way they carried themselves. And it was awesome. And, you know, and I think the guys fed off of it. They fed off of their confidence. And we just knew defensively with those teams, you know, both the Niners, you know, and the Broncos, that if we played our game and we kept getting the ball back to them, we knew we were going to win. It always came down to usually the defense had to do their job because we knew Montana, you know, and you could even say Young, but I didn't win a Super Bowl with Young. It was after I left. But then, you know, with John, it was, hey, let John do his thing, and we just know we're going to win.
Bill, we'll end with this. I know you do have ties to the 49ers, as we were just talking about, so I'm curious as to your thoughts on Super Bowl 54 and how you see this playing out.
You know what? I think it's going to be one hell. Hey, you got the two best teams in football. You got the best, I think, arguably the best. You do have the best quarterback, I think, in the NFL right now, against the best defensive line that the NFL has seen in quite a while. And I give the edge to the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, it's a slight edge. I give them a 3-point advantage because of Mahomes and because of the speed. But it really is going to come down to, hey, how, you know, prepared are each guy, all 53 guys, when they take the field, when it comes down to covering kicks? Because I had a coach, Jeff Fisher. He was a great head coach, but I had him in San Francisco when he was a receiver. He was a defensive back coach. And here's what he used to say. Offense sells tickets. Defense wins games. Special teams wins championships. Special teams might be the difference in this game. I hope San Francisco wins, but I feel the Chiefs, if I was a betting man, I would bet on the Chiefs.
Bill Romanowski, four-time Super Bowl champ, two-time Pro Bowler, a very illustrious career on the defensive side of the ball. Bill, it was a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for making time, and hopefully you'll enjoy Super Bowl 54.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bill Romanowski, former NFL linebacker, four-time Super Bowl champ, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to break once again. When we return, we'll be joined by Los Angeles Ram Hall of Fame defensive end Jack Youngblood. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, live from the Auto Forum Studios. Thrilled to bring in our next guest, who is joining us over the phone, live from Miami. He wears a gold jacket proudly, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and one of the greatest Los Angeles Ram defenders in their franchise history. He holds Ram records for most consecutive games played, most career sacks in the playoffs, most playoff starts, most career safeties, and second most career sacks. He is Jack Youngblood. Jack, it is a pleasure. I appreciate you making time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it, what we're doing here.
Yeah, it's definitely a great week. Obviously, Super Bowl 54. I know you have some Super Bowl history as well, and we can talk about that in just a moment. But, Jack, for someone that's a Hall of Famer, walking around Radio Row, wearing that gold jacket, basically just playing an ambassador for the game, what's a weekend like this like for yourself?
Well, it brings back great memories, and we love to, you know, gather together some of the players I played against and competitors and some of my own players. And it was just it's just a lot of fun. A lot of laughs, and it's like, yeah, a huge reunion.
It's definitely a special fraternity. I know that. We've talked to several players already today, and I know we'll talk to many more. But, Jack, you're special in the sense that you really represent a 1979 Rams team that wins the NFC Championship, goes to the Super Bowl in Pasadena, unfortunately comes up short against a very good Pittsburgh Steelers team. Yet, all in all, I think when you look back at the history of the Los Angeles or even the St. Louis Rams, that's one of the most special seasons in franchise history.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And we had been so close so many times in the 70s. You know, we just couldn't get over that last hump. And when we finally beat Tampa in the championship game, that put us into 14. And we realized that, okay, 14, that means we got a team that's got four rings already. And what, five or six Hall of Famers by anybody's measure. But at the same time, we were confident enough that we could play with them. And we felt we could stop their offense, and our defense our offense could put some points on the board against their defense.
I think if you go back, I've watched this game a million times. I wasn't alive for this game, so you know, I've gotten Super Bowl stories from my dad, and I've gone back and I've watched this game multiple times. And my estimation of this, Jack, has always been you guys outplayed the Pittsburgh Steelers. You outplayed this team. It was really two to three big plays that changed the outcome. A 31-19 final score really does not paint the entire picture of how you guys outplayed this team for the majority of the contest.
Well, it was 19-12. With 6 minutes left in the ball game, and Terry hit Swan, and then he hit the other wide receiver. Oh, I'm going blank. Anyway, and two scoring plays that that broke our back. And but up until that time, we played them when we played them well.
I think John Stallworth was the name that you were thinking of, correct?
Yes.
So yeah, nonetheless, still a very special moment for this franchise, special moment for this team. And I, you know, one of the clips that I always remember of you walking off the field when you guys beat the Dallas Cowboys, right? I think there's a couple of plays in Rams franchise history that are kind of synonymous with the team. You know, you have Warner connecting with Bruce in Super Bowl 34. I love Jim Everett connecting with Flipper Anderson. But you were on the sidelines for Ferragamo to Waddy, and that play is just so outstanding. You guys completely sent a silent hush across the hometown crowd against the Dallas Cowboys. That was kind of the propeller, right, to get you guys, of course, to the next round against Tampa Bay and then eventually into the Super Bowl against Pittsburgh. What do you remember about that road victory over Dallas?
Well, they were the arch enemy at that point in time, and we knew they had all of the weapons they needed, and we firmly believed as a defense that we could play with them and stop it, and we did so.
It's a very insane story, but you go down as having one of the most gutsiest performances in football history because you did something in 1979 injury-wise that's almost unbelievable. After you suffer a broken fibula in your left leg, you came back onto the field, played the rest of the playoffs, went into the Super Bowl with a broken leg, and you didn't just stand in one place. It's not as if you were actually just a metaphor or a good story. You played football with a broken leg. Jack, what type of mental toughness does it take to endure something like that?
Well, I've been trained for it for about 10 years now. You know, you if you play the game and play it at the level that we have to play at to be good players, it takes the ability to block out the bad and accept the good. And and that's exactly what happened to me when I broke that leg, and when I came back in to play, as long as I was just walking on it, it was painful. But when the ball snapped, that pain went away.
It's magnificent to hear you talk about that. I mean, you know, we know that in today's technology, the ability to heal from an injury is so much shorter than it once upon a time was. What was the treatment like for a broken leg in 1979 to play throughout the postseason? What were some of the things that you had to do after games to prepare?
Well, the basics was there to, you know, try to make it heal faster as you possibly can, and at the same time reinforce that injury with tape, and then we put a plastic cuff on the outside of the fibula and taped it on too, so that if somebody kicked it, you know, it wouldn't cause that much damage, you know, while you're playing.
You definitely got to play with some of the all-time greats, especially on the defensive end of the field for the Rams. You got to play with the likes of Fred Dreyer, Nolan Crumwell, just to name a few. Who was the most inspirational player for you on the during your tenure with the Los Angeles Rams? Someone that really helped you become a Hall of Fame defender?
Two guys, and I tell this all the time, and I truly, firmly believe this. If I hadn't been drafted, to the Rams, I would not have been able to have the teacher like Deacon Jones and Merle Dolson. Both of them put their arm around me at one point in time that first year and said, son, you can play, but we got to teach you how to play. And I told them, boys, I'm all ears. Trust me. I'm all ears.
It's fantastic. I mean, you're talking about two of the all-time greats, two members of the fearsome foursome. I know the Rams leave L.A. They go to St. Louis. Last season, you had an opportunity to be around the Super Bowl once again, and the Los Angeles Rams were back in the game. For someone who is such a symbol for this franchise, how great was that to see the Rams back in the Super Bowl last season?
Well, to be honest, I didn't think it was a smart move in the first place. And then second of all, I was pleased that they came back and came back to the second largest TV, you know, population in the country or in the world, and build a new stadium, you know, start this thing all over again, because you can establish a great new Los Angeles Ram football team.
And they've done that. They've done that at this point. Obviously, this year, maybe they fell a little bit short of expectations. But for someone who's a Hall of Famer, you spend your career with the Rams, they leave L.A., they go to St. Louis. Did it feel like for many years that you were almost an orphan, I guess, in the NFL fraternity? I don't know if that's the right wording or not, but I mean, the Rams are in St. Louis. They're not in L.A. L.A. doesn't have a football team. And St. Louis had kind of gone on and embraced their own, I guess, story in NFL history. Did it feel like you were kind of lost when the Rams were in St. Louis?
Yeah. Yes, it did. It was kind of insulting, to be honest, where they didn't acknowledge the fact that we were Rams. In fact, they didn't put us up in their new stadium in St. Louis. And now they've moved back, turned it around, and building one of the finest stadiums that's going to be in the NFL.
So with that perspective, and knowing that we have a guy like Isaac Bruce, who may go into the Hall of Fame, a guy like Torrey Holt we may see go into the Hall of Fame, Orlando Pace is in the Hall of Fame, so is Kurt Warner, so is Marshall Faulk. Do the Los Angeles Rams alum, do you guys try to embrace those St. Louis Rams to prevent that feeling of saying, okay, well, we were the St. Louis Rams, and now we don't have a team?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a messed up situation there. You know, now you got... LA Ram fans, you know, all over middle Missouri, and then they move back. And now they got to reestablish that connection back to the fans.
Yeah, it is bizarre. It is. Jack Youngblood, I definitely appreciate the time. I got one more question for you before I let you go. We've talked about the 1979 season. We talked about playing in the Super Bowl in Pasadena. We've talked about the Rams franchise. What does it mean to you to be a Hall of Fame defensive end?
What an honor. What an honor it is to be recognized as I was voted in as the 121st player to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That's the highest honor you can have. You're one of 120 in all of these years.
It's definitely a beautiful thing. You definitely earned your place among football immortality. Jack Youngblood, Los Angeles Ram legend, I really appreciate you taking out the time to talk with us, especially with the Super Bowl right around the corner. Jack, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Great stuff from Hall of Famer Jack Youngblood here on Drive Time Sports. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. One more interview. We'll be joined by Mitch Wishnowsky. He'll be punting in Super Bowl 54 Sunday night for the San Francisco 49ers. He'll join us over the phone when we return on Drive Time Sports.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and we have one more guest who is kind enough to join us right now over the phone. He's a rookie punter from the University of Utah, and he'll be participating in Super Bowl 54 Sunday night. We have Mitch Wishnowsky over the phone right now. Mitch, it's so great to get you on. It's been a while since we talked last, so thank you for the time.
Of course, mate. Thanks for having me.
First off, you got to tell me what the environment is like. We're over here in freezing cold Utah. You're in beautiful Miami at the moment, getting ready to participate in Super Bowl 54. What's it been like for you as a punter?
You know, a fair bit of media, but other than that, it's just basically a normal work week practice, and we're practicing at the University of Miami, and everything's basically the same. Try to keep it like a normal work week.
How difficult is that, knowing that you have not only one, but 2 weeks in between games? I mean, you guys build this momentum in winning the NFC Championship, and you do it in dominating fashion against the Packers, and instead of kind of keeping it as a normal routine, you guys have to take 2 weeks off. How difficult is that?
I can't speak to the other boys, but, I mean, I don't mind a week off. You know, we basically keep everything the same. We had a normal work week last week, and then us kickers and punters and snappers had a simulated game on the weekend. So we keep everything the same. As far as like mentally and physically, we it's basically the same.
And Mitch, you are so unique because, again, you are a punter, and we watched you with the University of Utah 2016 through 2018. You were so dynamic, one of two punters selected in the 2019 draft, and it just seems like things have just taken off. How big of a transition is it to go from college to the NFL from a punter's perspective?
I think the biggest thing is that there's a rule change. So in college, the whole line of scrimmage, the second the ball snapped, can get downfield. Whereas in the NFL, you can't leave the line of scrimmage until the ball's been punted. So basically, that's two seconds of operation time that the ball has to be in the air in order for your coverage team to get downfield. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, learning in which situations, what punt to hit, where to hit it, things like that. So, you know, I'm still learning a lot after my first year, but I think just basically the rule change and figuring out what to hit where is the main one.
For those who know the story, I mean, you had a punt at Santa Barbara City College in 2014, right? A red shirt in 2015. This way you could conserve some NCAA eligibility. I mean, your college career, it was kind of hectic, right? I mean, that's fair to say, isn't it?
Sort of. I wouldn't change anything. But I think the way that sort of the way I got here was, you know, going to junior college and then going to college and then, college at the University of Utah and then the NFL. It sort of steps up, and, you know, University of Utah put a big see the importance of special teams. So, you know, they had high expectations and things like that. So I think that, you know, helped me prepare for the NFL for sure.
Again, Mitch Wishnowsky, punter for the San Francisco 49ers, joining us right now. Mitch, you said it's just kind of like a normal work week. You know, the punters don't necessarily get a lot of media attention. And so I guess in preparation for this game, when you guys kind of go off on your own, what are some of the things that you're preparing for and you're going over in preparation for this game? Because I'm sure it's different from any other position that we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we get a couple of reps with the team. But other than that, it's a lot of mental stuff, sort of preparing for the game, basically talking about what punts we hit where, how we're going to sort of limit their punt returner, the best ways to do it, things like that. So, you know, we'll go in with a game plan and I'll stick to the game plan. And that's basically sort of what we do at practice.
What stands out to you about this Kansas City Chiefs special teams unit in returning punts?
I mean, they're elite returners, kickoff and punt return. Hardeman and Tyreek Hill are both elite. So hang time and direction is a premium over distance this week.
Well, we'll end with this, Mitch. I know you're extremely busy, and I do appreciate you taking out the time. But is it set in yet? Have you ever? Is it really like soaked into your mind that you're participating in the Super Bowl? You're going to be a punter in Super Bowl 54?
Yeah, I mean, it hit me after the game last week at one point. It was, you know, all celebrating, and then I was in the tubs, and it sort of hit me like wow, we're going to the Super Bowl. But soon after that, it's like, okay, time to prepare for the Chiefs and get into our normal work week. So, you know, let it sink in for a little bit, and then back to work. And I'm sure I'll reflect on it after the game.
Sure, and it just meshes, right? I mean, the University of Utah, they produce such a long line of very successful kickers and punters, and now your name just it almost feels like it goes to the top with you participating in a Super Bowl. You've come from a long list of successful special teamers at Utah.
Yeah, I mean, Tom and Andy, they were there for when I started and, you know, sort of helped guide me to where I am. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to get into the NFL, and so is Matt. So it was cool to be able to sort of, you know, go through the process with Matt. And, you know, me and Matt both get drafted this year and sort of experience the NFL together.
Well, Mitch, it was a pleasure to speak with you. I really appreciate the time. I know you're an extremely busy guy, especially with the Super Bowl right around the corner. Best of luck in Super Bowl 54.
Thanks, man.
That's Mitch Wisnowski, San Francisco 49er punter, joining us on the show ahead of Super Bowl 54. And unfortunately, with that, we are out of time on this edition of the show. A lot of fun. I want to thank all the guests that took the time to join us on the show today. I always look forward to Super Bowl, the weekend of the Super Bowl. We always get a great group of guests here on the show. I want to thank you for joining. It's always great to be along with you on the afternoon drive. Have a fantastic and safe weekend. We will catch you on Monday. I am out.